Hi guys, and welcome to another episode of the Data Leadership Podcast. And today I'm joined by Andre Beligier. We're actually going to be speaking about how to build diverse and scalable data science teams. And Andre is well placed to speak about that. He's actually VP of Worldwide Data Science Services at DataRobot, which is quite a title, I must admit, quite a title. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks, Rich, for the invitation, and I'm happy to talk about my experience. Yep.
Good, good. So first off, just give us a little bit of background then about how you got into data, your journey so far, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so it all started about 10 years ago. I was studying math and engineering, so I was oriented towards numbers from the get-go. My first career choice was finance, so I worked in finance for about a year and a half. It was back in 2011. At that time, there was a crisis on the financial markets. It was not a great time to be there. Even though I learned a lot of things, I found it interesting. Actually, what I realized is what I was the most interested in is analyzing the data. So one of my jobs was to actually, as a business analyst, analyze sales data on the for the financial clients, financial institutions, and I really enjoyed what I was doing at that time. So that's combined with the fact that around that period, I kind of got to know about machine learning. And I also read that machine learning and AI was a booming sector and data science in general. So I thought that like stars were aligning quite well. So that's why I decided to work in data. So I then ended up working in machine learning. So I did a master's in machine learning, then went to do some research and then got into data science right after. Yeah.
What do you think about, what was it about machine learning that maybe caught your interest to go ahead and go down the educational route as well?
Yeah, so it's a combination of practicality, mathematical tools, and applications. Let's say that machine learning itself, it's basically a set of techniques to learn from data in automated fashion. So we kind of teach the machine how it can learn patterns out of usually data as the main resource. I really like numbers, I like math, but I'm also very practical, and math for math is not that interesting to me, whereas like math for making something useful that has applications is definitely much more interesting. So that's why I got initially into machine learning, is of the practical applications that were very wide, not focused only on the financial sector, for example, but on so many different industries. And I could see that there was just a strong need on the market, and that's why I decided from a technical perspective to learn about it. And then as I learned about it, I was actually super interested about like the technical side as well. So that's definitely, I found my path at that time, yeah.
Probably set you up quite nicely being like a business analyst to give you that skill set, that perspective, before going on to the technical side, because I know in a recent episode, to be fair, we were discussing the importance of the business understanding, and actually having that from the get-go must have really helped you when you went down that route. Who is sort of Andre outside of data as well? I always think it's interesting because it sounds like most of your world has been data, really. I mean, yeah, who are you outside of that?
Yeah, of course. I've lived in London for 8 years now. Just before I was in Singapore. I'm from Paris initially. I like traveling. I live with my dog, and I like going to social events, whether it's discovering new restaurants or like theater, all these kind of things. I'm also passionate about a lot of other tech topics, like for example cryptos and this kind of like blockchain and this kind of other technologies that kind of somehow are connected to AI, but I like getting into the deep end of some technical applications of various technologies.
Yeah, nice. Okay. Well, look, moving on to the topic of conversation, I suppose. So we're going to talk about actually building data science teams, diverse teams, but also how to scale that. And that is really your background, isn't it? I mean, just give us a bit of an intro to DataRobot as well.
Yeah, DataRobot. So we are what we call a SaaS company. So we provide a software as a service to our customers. For mainly other businesses. So We sell a software that is basically an end-to-end AI platform. So what DataBot allows our clients to do is typically to prepare, build, deploy, and then manage AI systems in production. So it helps companies to be much, make it much way easier to build those models or these systems, then to deploy them, and then to put them in production in a business context that actually generates value in some way, and implement it into, like, a, let's say, a business process. So the platform makes it easier and much faster than with traditional tools. Like, very often we talk about coding end-to-end in Python, like an AI system. Here, you can do this, but you also have alternatives and ways to make it much more easy.
Yeah, and it must, I mean, it's a massive market, isn't it? A massive market, and one that's only going in one direction, but also a massively competitive market, right? Yeah. There's lots of people doing this type of thing. So and you guys have grown significantly, right? So you must be doing something right. But how just talk about, I suppose, the scale of the business now.
Yeah, sure. So just talking about, you talk about massive market, I just want to give some number because there are some analysis here that are projecting how the market will evolve for AI. So the spending in AI and AI software in general will increase by a factor of 100 between 2020 to 2030. Goes to from 100 billion to 10 trillion. And that's, so we are literally just getting started in terms of investment. And why is because there's so much value associated. Yeah. So DataBot, we're probably one of the very first companies to build an AI platform. We were like pioneers in the sector of, in like building a solution for what we call AutoML, automated machine learning, which is like automating the tasks that you need to do when you build a machine learning system. Now we've expanded the platform, so we'll also have some data preparation, MLOps, and like end-to-end, basically. The in terms of the growth and the scale of our like DataBot today, when I joined back in 2013, the 6 years anniversary, I think, is tomorrow, actually. back 6 years ago, when I joined, we were a bit less than 100. We were pre-Series A, sorry, pre-Series B, so we just had raised our Series A. And today we are about a bit less than 2,000. I'd say, I think it's 1,800 and in the business. And we have raised, so we have we had our Series G recently. So we raised like 7 or 8 rounds of funding with a total of $1 billion of funding. So that's the scale is completely different. It's a different type of company. And I was part of like kind of one of the very first employees in Europe, in EMEA. Yeah.
Yeah, it must be crazy to actually see that journey and that growth firsthand. So when we're talking about data science teams specifically, then how has that grown over that time?
Yeah, sure. So when I joined back 6 years ago, there was a data science team building the core product, so that's more engineering. I actually was part of that team for a few months, but then I joined the customer facing data science team. At that time, we were, I think, 8 globally, most of them in the US. There was one in Japan, one in Singapore, myself in London. We're like not a lot of people, like really like 8. And we were, our goal was to support our customers, help them deliver AI systems. So we grew from this small team, very like initial team of customer facing data science, to an organization that is now supporting our customers, both pre-sales. So we have a pre-sales data science team, and also that supports our customers once they purchase our platform by delivering services, professional services, the team I lead. We have today about, I would say, 100 pre-sales data scientists, about maybe 75 data scientists who are more professional services, so more post-sales. And we also still have some data scientists working on the product. So that's really has grown a lot. It's a core, I mean, it's almost 20% of our employees. So it's a core function in DataBot, because we need to surround our customers with this data science expertise to make them successful.
That's insane, right? That's a huge, huge scale, because I think everyone knows growing data science teams is probably one of the toughest areas to build out because of retention issues, because of keeping them engaged, keeping so many different factors, let alone the fact that there's a massive, massive shortage of that skill set, regardless of how it's improved over recent years. How did you go about doing that, and what are some of the main challenges that you face?
Yeah, so I hired so far about somewhere around 50 to 60 data scientists in this organization. How did we go about it? I guess it depends on where you are, like, and the scale, and also the brand that you have in the sector. When we started, it was very important to find people who are go and getters, like people who know that they would be joining an adventure that would be like where there would be a lot of flexibility, but also like where potentially we're on a path to growth. So like attracting the talent by showing them the potential and something different from the rest of the market is really important, and was really important in my case. DataRobot, we were providing something, a product that was very different from the rest of the market. We're providing a growth opportunity, and other opportunities to kind of grow their career like very quickly as well because of the growth. That's what allowed me to kind of like, by connecting on a personal level with the potential candidates, allowed me to attract very good talents from the get-go. And some of the very first hires that I made are still in the company today and are very performant. So, and they become like now the director of like a unit or a function. So it's like, it is important to kind of like show something that's very different from the market. It's indeed a market where there is a lot of attrition because constantly when you're a data scientist, even before I joined DataRobot, I was contacted on LinkedIn like multiple times per day by recruiters and others to actually like get me to like a team that were created. So there's a lot, there are a lot of options. If you make your option unique and stand out and you actually inspire the people that you want to hire, then you are potentially able to kind of like stand out across all of those with different options.
It's 100% around having a compelling story and brand behind your what you're looking to achieve, and I think that's where a lot of organizations sort of skip over that bit, and they, you know, the adverts, the their strategy and talent attraction just doesn't really involve telling that story. And 9 times out of 10 there is a great story behind it, but it needs to be put across in the right way. I suppose attracting them is one thing, then actually retaining them, like you said, is very very difficult challenge. How do you feel, is there anything that you did or DataRobot did and do, I suppose, to try and increase the chance that people will, you know, stay within the organization?
Yeah. So I think, as always, like in the same when you hire, if you have a very clearly stated purpose of why the person is within the company and what they can achieve in the next few years if they stay in the company, it's probably the best tool to allow to retain. So obviously there are financial incentives, and the same way when you hire, like people would like, some people would just look at the salary. Typically those people are not interesting to me. Like these people who look at, yes, there is a compensation, but also look at having and building something together that excites them. Once you hire those people, and the people like you get, you keep them excited by providing always new challenges and new things to learn. And then like they start continue building things with you. Then those people will stay. I had a very, very like low churn or attrition rate in my team. Probably, I think there were maybe 5 resignations out of a team of 60 in the past few years. It was very, very low. And why is because we keep like growing people, growing in terms of responsibilities, could be management or could be more technical, giving them more like challenging and more strategic initiatives progressively as they grow. But also we keep like also the company grows itself, and also we reward in consequence. So we do have options and stocks that we're providing to our employees that obviously like took a lot of value, but also like ensuring that when they do something great, they're rewarded with, we have bonuses that we distribute quarterly, as well as compensation reviews that we do like regularly. So
I think it's them being part of something, isn't it? That's
exactly.
I think too many people hire and they, you know, it's pretty aimless, and it's like, what are they actually doing? What's the outcome to what they're doing? And we're talking about at scale here. Like we're talking significantly more than most organizations would build out a team. And I think once you get past that, I don't know, 5-10 sort of data scientists or AI professionals, it starts, must be some massive challenges to scale.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, basically, as you scale, at first I struggled with this a lot when I started to hire. Like there was a point where I had a lot of work to do with my own clients, so individual contribution work. I had 7 people that I had hired in my team, and I need to hire more. So all of those like competing priorities, that's something that I had to learn and to deal with by just delegating, handing over. I remember at some point I was almost forced by my manager, who was the global head of the function, to actually remove all my individual contribution activities. Yeah. Within a quarter, I had 10 big accounts, including like one of the biggest banks in the UK, and I had to hand over and have a plan for all of them so that within a couple of months, like it was someone else in my team who would be like doing the work instead of myself. And sometimes hard to accept. So scaling like goes through focus, and focus, you have to create it sometimes, even in particular with like the managers that you'll be, or the leaders that you'll be like kind of like helping ramp. You have to ensure those leaders are focused on like scaling as well in their own part of the business and make them owner of it. And if they do too much individual contribution or too much themselves, it's not good. So you have to convince them and help them to actually reduce this activity so that they can be focused on recruitment. That is critical, but also then retaining the current employees and then the performance of their current employees instead of their own performance.
It's wild, isn't it?
And managers in a way, but that's, you don't have any other option. Above 10 people, you need managers because you need people who'd be focused on bringing the business.
I think it's a really good point you make around delegating and stepping away, and sometimes that being a really big challenge yourself, especially if you've had that initial success of attracting and retaining that team, to then actually pass some of that responsibility away and the success of it away. You'd have to have a lot of trust in those individuals, which I'm sure you did, and obviously you hired the right people, because if it scaled to that extent. How important is diversity in all of this?
Diversity is critical, I would say. Building a diverse team is also what keeps people excited, like the other people in the team, because they feel they can learn from their colleagues. It's also what helps you, like just overall as a team, perform better. Like you need a diverse team across different dimensions. So when you talk about diversity, we typically always think about like the gender diversity or ethnicity diversity. That's important for sure. In particular, like if you start operating across multiple countries, such as we do, it's important to actually have a diverse team that I can also handle a diverse set of customer situations. But the other things I think about diversity is like diversity in terms of profile, in terms of industry experience. Like, so I have people who have mainly worked in retail before, other people who come from banking. Someone in my team used to be a trader, then like kind of like opened a surfing school and then came back to a PhD before going into data science. So, you know, like these people who have profile that are like go out of the norm is definitely important to bring in. Like, so you need kind of a baseline of all the potential, you map all the dimensions in terms of skill sets and in terms of industry experience, and in terms of like even background, like even educational background that you think could fit with the job, and try to be as diverse as possible between all those dimensions. And something I struggled a bit with to have was actually a more diverse team with a more female in the team, because they are just overwhelming. Like if you don't do anything, there are just like 90% of the candidates were male. So like it was very hard to actually build up this initial like number of like women in the team that could then attract more women. But that's really important to actually make the effort. Otherwise, if you don't make this effort to actually make even your candidate base more diverse, you never get to it. And then you have like this like male only culture that starts creating, and no women would want to join this kind of team.
What impact can that have, not only just not attracting like women into that job, but also what impact does that have on the work, the customer, the client experience as well?
No, it's very important. Because customers, they are all different, also the work are all different. So if you think about, let's say, the diversity of industry experience, you need to map industries with like kind of client work. And so you want to put experts in some cases like that are come from this particular industry with the customers who are from this industry. We also want the others to be able to learn from them. So potentially have someone else who is not from this industry shadow them. So if you have a diverse team, you're able to be both more efficient in delivering what the expertise that the clients may want, but also the others could learn from this expertise or could learn from like this background or these cultural differences, and then can take it on board for them so that they can potentially themselves be more efficient in the future. So overall, this diversity is important for the client environments, but also like if like And then here, if you come back to gender diversity or like ethnicity diversity, if we were all like, you know, from exactly the same background, it doesn't resonate very well for some clients as well. And so you have to show diversity, and you have to like actually embrace diversity within the team in the first place.
I think you know, it's shifting now, and people see the importance of it. I think it's just really difficult for a lot of people to actually go about creating an environment that attracts those individuals. I mean, is there anything that you did that you feel works and maybe helped push that diversity piece?
Yeah, the easiest for like a diversity is to actually leverage whoever. Let's say if you have like a particular group that you realize you don't have a good representation within your team, maybe you have one person coming from that group, is to actually make those people owner of trying to bring and advertise on their network, because obviously in particular for women, like I have a few women in my team that I actually tasked to contact directly some candidates that were women, so that they can see, oh yes, there are some women in this team, potentially it could be good. So it's much the like leverage your internal employees who come from diverse backgrounds to actually encourage this diversity more.
Yeah.
Like
when
you're a woman and you like have all those teams of like data science who are mainly only men, but you see like a woman like kind of contacts you on LinkedIn, you may be actually saying, oh, they're probably a bit more diverse, so I may be interested in, and it triggers a discussion. At least you can have the initial discussion, and they might ignore all the others because they're all the same. They all look the same. If you stand out and you look more diverse, then it's easier to attract them. Yeah. And I'm saying this for the same for like countries of origins or like language, or leverage your internal levers that you may have that come from those diverse backgrounds, you know, to attract new people from this background. That's one thing I did that worked quite well.
I really like that. I think that's a really good idea, and probably something that can be overlooked a little bit as well. So when you're scaling like this, there must be, and I can empathize with this because I'm in this situation now where trying to grow a team, and it's trying to keep the quality high, and that is really key, and making sure you don't make bad hires just because of demand and because you're under pressure. That must have happened time and time again for yourself, right, in terms of like trying to find that balance.
Yeah, so keeping the quality high, I mean, quality at the end of the day, there are a few characteristics that you can judge on a person on that would allow you to know whether this person will potentially perform well in an environment like ours. Ours is a fast growth startup environment, highly tech oriented. So like the characteristics that I typically look at, because it's true, you may hire superstars. You may hire someone who's been like, don't know, number one on Kaggle, but you won't have those people every day. And when you scale, you can't have only those people. So you may start with some of those people like this, but if you manage to convince them early on, this is great, but it's not scalable. If you want to keep it scalable, you have to actually find people who have a lot of potential, the potential to grow and become superstars. They may not be superstars now, but they will become superstars. How do you find them? There are a few characteristics we look at. First, we look at, and we put that in four dimensions. The first one is intelligence. So, and then that, by that, it's not only intelligence like IQ, like pure logical intelligence, it's also the EQ, like the social intelligence. How the person interacts, how the person is able to understand like where you're coming from when you ask questions, and then like ask the right question and be relevant. That's those things that you can detect with there are particular techniques to test for intelligence that you can do during the interviews. We test for character. Character, someone who has the grit, who wants to do more, who wants to be part of something, who will like be like straight away, give them a challenge. They would not like say, oh, it's too hard. They would actually come and embrace the challenge and try to find all the ways to solve it. This character, like that's what we're looking for, someone who really has the motivation. And then the third one, which is probably one of the most important ones, is coachability, and it's often overlooked. Someone who is coachable is someone, when you give them feedback, they will take the feedback on board and act upon it straight away, and they will not be defensive. There are so many people who are really, really smart. They did great things, but you give them a tiny bit of feedback, and then they don't take it. That's exactly what you don't want in your team, because even if someone is intelligent, has good character, I mean, even if they don't necessarily have exactly the experience, you give them the feedback and they can improve upon it, and you see 6 months down the line, they'll be great individual. And then the last one that everyone typically looks at is experience. Obviously, experience is important. But let's say if someone scores very, very strongly on the first three, experience probably, like, you can actually trade off some lack of experience against the first three because it's high potential. And we always look at this, and when we talk about from interviewer to interviewer, we talk about always about those four dimensions. And that allow us to find people that we can develop to become superstars, even if they're not superstars today. And that's probably one of the ways we can get scalable.
Yeah, that is so important, because especially when there is such a shortage, you have to be creative in hiring, and you have to start hiring for potential. 100%. So on top of just the scaling challenge that you've had, on top of that, you've actually got another challenge, really, because now the level you're at, it's globally, right? It's actually managing teams globally, which, again, we've all been through a lot in the last few years. But when you're managing globally or remotely, it's a whole different ballgame, isn't it?
Yeah. So I lead today an organization with about 75 individuals, maybe 80, like if you include the leaders. We are based in primarily the main part is Americas. We have also a global team for delivery. We have a team in EMEA. We have a team in APAC. So since I moved to that responsibility, because before that I was only EMEA, so it was more easy to manage in terms of time zones. Now I have to be really flexible. Sometimes I try to avoid it, but I may need to take a call in the evening because it's the only slot where the US in San Francisco will be available. And it's a slot that will work also for let's say someone in Hong Kong. And I have to kind of be a bit more flexible than what I used to in terms of times. But it's always very important that I keep time also to relax in my diary. Otherwise, it's always on. At some points, you just your productivity decreases. So I create the time. I put the blockers to ensure that I have enough focus time. I have also enough time where I kind of like just disconnect for a few hours. It's very important every day. It's the flexibility is important, but with a certain level of control that you create yourself and that you also make visible to your the other people that you work with. The other thing that's very important to scale like this is that when you have so many different regions, it's important because of culturally and also the way people work, it's important that you rely on very leaders for each of those regions who you can delegate a lot of the day-to-day and the BAU. So I have multiple leaders in Americas, but one in particular who is like the Americas lead. I have two for EMEA, one for APAC. So I trust those people to do most of day to day, and I kind of delegate as much as possible. And they kind of surface to me like only the things that are critical or that would be replicable for other teams that could be useful. And so we have very regular syncs, all of us, to ensure that we're aligned. And this team of leader I became their leader quite recently because we're restructuring the team. Some of them actually have trained myself and developed, but this team of leader is what makes it scalable and efficient, obviously.
Yeah, and it must be so hard to, because especially when you're dealing with customers and clients, to keep that level of and quality of service consistent across different cultures and teams, but very difficult. I suppose to wrap this up then a little bit, what you've seen data science and AI evolve a lot over recent years, obviously being at the coalface, basically. How do you see that changing or developing over the coming years? You've already mentioned that it's going to be a lot of spend in this area. What do you think is going to be the outcome of that?
Yeah, so how did I see it changing first in the past 5-6 years? So I joined DataHubbard, and even before that, I was at Sky as a data scientist. All the markets was about, there was already some hype around it, like coming from the tech companies in the US primarily, a lot of hype, but no one knew what to do with it. I remember there was Gartner, was saying to the CIOs back 6-7 years ago, they were saying, oh, hire data scientists, those people know about AI and stuff. And they will solve all of your problems and generate plenty of value. You won't regret it. Hire data scientists, and that starts from there. The thing is that at that time, because it was Like first, the business had not like didn't really know what value they could get out of machine learning and AI, but they were quite excited by it because you know machine making decisions instead of you like it's sexy.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, I can do plenty of things with it, but you don't know the extent of how possible it is, or you don't know how to do it, or you had no idea about how to operationalize it. So a lot of companies hired those teams of data scientists, and everything was about POCs, proof of concepts, like, oh, I'm doing this POC for that, this POC for this. And so it's all about proving like the concept or the value of whatever you are doing. And it was very experimental, I would say. So that was back a few years ago, depending on the market and the industry, it was more or less recent. But this phase of experimental AI is something that we are starting to move away from, or we are already moved away from in a lot of industries or in a lot of countries. And so we went from experimental AI to like have a focus on more operationalizing AI. And so in the past few years, whether it's in banking where you have a lot of regulations and a lot of scrutiny about anything that could be an automated decision, whether it's let's say in retail consumer or on consumer where you actually have more scrutiny about whether you make biased decisions or not about your customer. So all of those we have like you take into account the business constraint. And also the technical constraints and as well as the people constraints. And now you actually create processes end to end that allow to kind of develop and then deploy and manage AI systems. And those systems like this kind of like creating end to end in a way that is repeatable and a way that kind of like if you do it for one use case and then you do it for another use case, you don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. Why it's very important to be able to scale it. So we started from experimental AI, had a few ideas, some of them, a lot of them failed, some of them succeeded. Then now it's operationalizing AI, and now it's all about making it more scalable. So I want to repeat it across like different use cases. And if I have new ideas, I have a process to qualify the idea and map it in the roadmap against all the other ideas that you may have, then have potentially like some initial work to qualify more, then actually develop a solution, then have the business involved in the development of the solution, have all the constraints like compliance and everything involved also in the design of the solution, then actually deploy the solution, put it into the IT system, and then like manage it in the longer term. So what happens 2 years after that once you use this collection? So that's where this shift really operated. I'd say some industries faster than others. So obviously the tech industry has been the fastest because they are more used to having like technical depth and technical legacy that they create. So they created a lot of platforms for it. You saw all those big startups like Uber and the likes creating platforms that they developed in-house. And now you have also more and more solutions on the market where even if you're not a tech company, you can actually go for whether it's DataHub or others, like the big cloud vendors have things that allow you to actually get a head start and make it much easier to have the end-to-end process. And a lot of companies are creating this at the moment. So it's a great moment to be an AI software company right now.
Exactly. It's just a great market of interest, isn't it? I love working in it. You know, it's so fast moving. And it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, what happens over the coming years. I mean, I suppose a final bit of advice, I suppose, if you're a data leader maybe you're in a business that is actually plans and strategizes to quite quickly scale their data science function or their AI function, what overview advice would you give to someone who's maybe about to embark on it?
Someone who is about to embark on it, I would say first create a team that, or think about creating a team that can cover all the parts of the end-to-end process, not only data scientists, but also some people who have data engineering skills and some people who have business skills and who can all work together to actually build the end-to-end. Find some quick wins that allow you to then like show to the business that yes, AI can generate a lot of value. Create those quick wins and focus on them. In the meantime, while you create those quick wins, think about what would be like the long-term platform you want to build, and that allows you to then scale whatever, like for all the other use cases and ideas. Because as you create those quick wins and you showcase them to the rest of the business, then there'll be more and more appetence to actually the departments who want to work with you. So you need to have like a process where you can onboard them quickly and deliver quickly for them as well. So always think like build those quick wins, but always thinking about a platform that you then use and that's actually useful for the long term. Don't get too fast and be careful of not failing too fast too. Like you have to qualify well the ideas, build a quick win on them, and then like leverage the platform that you've been developing. Yeah. So
having that like short and long term strategy is really important.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And all organizations do it in a different way. You know, like some of them are much more centralized, some of them more distributed, depends on the kind of business you have and how the business interacts with the IT functions or more like the analytics functions. But creating like an organization that can scale it according to your business and that has multiple diverse profile, and then like defining very well the responsibilities of each, what is handled by the data team, what is handled by the business team, and how do they collaborate together is also super important. Yeah,
a lot to think about. But look, I really appreciate your time today, Andre. It's been really good hearing about your experiences and what you've built. It's fantastic. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next. And we'll keep in touch.
Thanks a lot, Rich, for the invitation. And I'm also looking forward to knowing what happens next. And I think we're just getting started.